Welcome to Discover Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and today I got to talk to Miri Stone. Miri's short film, The Hunter, is kind of a special one for me. Besides being a great film, it also happens to be the first film that ever screened at the first film festival I ever programmed. So as filmmakers go, Miri was my first. And she even kicked things off by bringing her newborn baby to the festival, which was super cool on the red carpet. If you go to discoverfilm.net right now, you can see The Hunter, and I have to tell you, it's a special film, and it represents a genre that's very underrepresented in the short film world. But I gotta warn you about something. Right before we had this conversation, Miri had sent me a link to her new film, Light Me Up. It's another great short, and it was on my mind, so the first thing we discuss is Light Me Up, and I don't even think we use the title. So know that when this conversation begins, you're hearing Miri and I discuss the film that came after The Hunter, which is Light Me Up. After discussing Light Me Up for a bit, I got back on track, and it's more like a normal Discover Film interview. All right, here we go. Time for the sci-fi warp engine noise. But I wanted to tell you, so I watched the new one.
Oh, yeah.
And when I watched it, I went, wow, her work is always so beautiful and it's so well done. And then when I rewatched The Hunter, I went, wow, no, she really took it. It was funny. My memory of The Hunter matched really well with the new one. And then when I rewatched The Hunter, I'm like, no, she is really, there's really a lot more to the new one.
Visually,
you definitely, it's, as someone who cares a lot about parenthood, it was, it's the topic, but your visual style.
Yeah.
That film. It's so artistic, you know, you're an artist, which is so appreciated.
Thank you. That's really sweet of you to say. Light Me Up was a long time coming. I had the first inklings of that project a decade ago when I was still back in Sydney. I got diagnosed with a thing and the doctor basically said, hey, you're 26, but if you want to have kids, you better start trying because we might have to do IVF at 30. And you're going to have more miscarriages. You're more prone to miscarriages and other problems. And that night I had a dream of chasing this little girl through a sun-drenched autumn apple orchard. And I was in this panic state, but she was all happy and floating and giggling, but I was desperately trying to get to her. And then I woke up and sort of wrote the first bare bone draft of the film.
Right.
And then it did many iterations as you can imagine.
Well,
and many different teams and
obviously just so different that the place where you wrote it, the place you were in when you wrote it versus where you are now.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
didn't you tell me child number two has arrived?
Yep. He's nearly two now. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. So, yeah, totally. It's, a lot has happened since then. And it's funny because it's frustrating, isn't it, how long the development process is for film. And I always knew, especially once the script developed, that I wanted to do Light Me Up at it. At a level that was just way beyond anything I had done before in the short world, for sure. And I didn't want to do it half pie because the subject matter is so special. I really wanted to bring that fantasy to the screen, you know, so that it gave hope and courage, not just the pain of the trauma. I didn't want us to be left at the other end of that film with only feeling the pain. I wanted us to experience, oh, it's a big deal. Because it's at the moment it's kind of not talked about. There's not much of a conversation around it, and we're hiding it a lot as a society, hiding from it and hiding it ourselves, trying to deal with it in isolation. And so I wanted it to begin a conversation, but I wanted people to really see what it takes when people find that courage to move through it, that process.
Yeah, definitely. There's so much to say about that subject.
And
how it really should be the least secretive thing
I know. Really? Because we need
so,
that support.
It's so common, and it happens
one
to
in
everyone.
Four pregnancies.
It's just those rare groups of friends, really, where you can go out to dinner and share.
Yeah.
But it's... But, oh, I'm glad you did it. But you mentioned shorts and things. So actually, let me have you back up and go to your beginnings as a filmmaker, because that was something I couldn't ask you at the Q&A. We were really just discussing the Hunter. So, I mean, obviously, I think so highly of your capabilities. Where did you start?
Okay. This is I've got a weird road. Firstly, I was really, really lucky to grow up in a really unconventional kind of family. My dad was from Italy and my mum is a Kiwi, a New Zealander. And I grew up in New Zealand, but we firstly got to travel quite a bit to go and visit his family. So I got exposed at a young age to lots of different cultures. We wouldn't just go to Italy. We would like stop over for a while in like Asia or something like that. On the way. So I got exposed to just a lot of cool stuff like that. Growing up, and my dad was actually a musician and a composer, and he plays guitar beautifully, and he loves folk singing. So he's always off down, you know, at the weekly folk singing night, where he lives, with his community of friends. My mum is a really very talented visual artist, but she also absolutely shares my love of film and theater and storybooks, children's storybooks. And so they both supported me, like discovering all different parts of music and culture and drama. And we went to the cinema, and we had a theater subscription when I was young. And so I was performing in theater, and I was performing on stage with Dad in folk music concerts and stuff like that from
you were
a young age.
You were his backup
somewhat
singer.
Somewhat dragged at times. It was so embarrassing. No, he would make me lead. He would make me sing like an Italian folk song or something. And I would be like, oh my God, I just want to be swallowed up. But I loved drama and Shakespeare from a really young age. And so I would, I actually got to direct some of our school Shakespeare adaptations and stuff for the local competitions. And from that, I got to go to the Young Shakespeare. I was part of the New Zealand Young Shakespeare company that went to the Globe in 2000 after I graduated from high school. And then I did a Bachelor of Music because I was told I wasn't allowed to go straight to England and start being a thespian. So I like did a Bachelor of Music.
Wait, you were told by your parents? Or?
They were like, yeah, you should do a degree before you go adventuring and trying to join a troupe. So
interesting.
Of music, which was like composition. There was no way that was getting me a job.
I was gonna say that's the most wonderful compliment to the parents who say, if you're gonna go into the arts, have an accounting degree, have that backup.
I don't understand why they didn't force me into like a marketing degree or something. At least I could have done a dual degree, but I didn't.
Yeah.
So I just did this music.
But it kept you busy for 4 years, right? Three, four years. So you were more mature when you went off to be a troubadour. Or?
Yeah. Well, what was hilarious was that my teachers kept giving me like notes saying, "Hey, kind of feels like you're more directing. You're kind of making live theater maybe more than like musical performance pieces." So yeah, it was kind of like the pull was always there. And I met a boy while I was at university who played frisbee, and he was living in Sydney at the time and he was doing his PhD. So I had to choose between going to London or going to Sydney to be with him. And in the end, I chose that, which turns out it was great because he's my now husband and the father of my kids, and I love him to pieces.
Fantastic.
But that meant that I did drama school in Sydney instead. And I went on and did my advanced diploma in acting there. And as soon as I came out, I got on a short film as an actress. And I was there having to be this weird ass mannequin standing in a weird faux fur suit, standing stationary. And I was watching these kids, these student filmmakers, running a camera on a makeshift dolly, i.e. A borrowed wheelchair from a hospital above me. And I was just like, oh my God, I need to be there. I need to be behind the camera. I want to see what the images are. And so I started working in film production, like as an assistant director and other things.
Right. So it was absolutely your calling.
Yeah. It happened pretty fast. I mean, I love theater and I would love to go back and like direct some theater or even potentially act maybe later in Shakespeare, but I can't stay away from writing, whether it's a film script or I'm working on some novels at the moment. So I just have to write, and the directing just always called me, the production side of film. I loved it. And I didn't feel like, because I had been trained so much in a theater, all my acting training was theater. I found when I got to work with really talented actors, I was just so thrilled to see how that really, because it's such a different skill set. It's such a different ability to be able to inhabit a moment in the minutiae like that. And so it was just so thrilling to be able to work with actors, who had all that craft, and bring out a story. It's just something absolutely, it's one of my favorite parts of what I get to do.
Yeah, well, and definitely from watching some of your work, the performance, you started as a performer, but your writing is a performance too. There's definitely performance in the way you write. Some people write very flatly, but yeah, you're performing on the page.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, that's a really interesting way to put it. But I think, yeah, I've definitely always... It's happening in my mind when I'm writing. Like people are talking almost to each other and experiencing it, and I'm capturing it.
Yeah. And just so I'm clear on the biography, because you've mentioned several countries already.
Yeah.
But most of your schooling was New Zealand, and then you moved to Sydney for love.
Right. And Sydney was where I did my acting training, and I started all the film stuff.
Right. So you actually got started on film in Sydney. So
right,
how long did it take you to start making a short?
Well, I directed my first short for a really cute, fun festival called Tropfest back in Sydney. And that was like in 2007 with a friend from drama school. We decided, oh, we'll just make a film. And we contacted the cinematographer who was either at film school or just come out. And we were sitting there, and we found someone to be the a co-producer with us. And we were sitting there around the table a couple of weeks out from when we thought we would shoot in her apartment, because we were going to shoot in her apartment. And it was all about trying to do it on no money and have some fun, you know. And it was a little ghost story. And the cinematographer turned to us. Jamal Santos, I think his name was. He turned to us and he said, so what are you planning on doing for lights? And this is how green we were. Me and Shay just looked at each other and we said, lights. I mean, the apartment has lights. And I just love that because we were just, you know, so young. And he was like, ah, right. And I could see all the world, like all the wheels turning in his head. And he like did an awesome job of bringing some friends from the course he'd just finished and some equipment and stuff like that. And we just shot a little ghost story in her place. And that was my first short called Unexpected Happenings.
Excellent. And then you loved it.
Yeah, I find shooting thrilling. I also love the editing process. The DP ended up editing it as well, and he was really great. I mean, I really enjoy all the phases. Maybe not the financing, but everything else. I really, really love it. Yeah. And then I made a few different shorts and web series and teamed up with a filmmaker to start a little video production company a little bit later on. And we realized pretty quickly that we really wanted to make a micro-budget creature feature. It would be her second feature that she'd made. And that was Bunyip. And we shot that. She was a rock climber. And so she wrote it with that in mind, knowing that we could do stunts and things like that. So it was an adventure thriller with a creature, which we held a kind of online competition to design, and ended up bringing a creature and special effects makeup over from the US to come and help us shoot the film. around the Blue Mountains in Australia.
Wow, super.
Yeah. And that was just before we moved to Seattle. So Cam got work over here and we moved over for that. So I was literally trying to shoot the film while he was setting up home here and doing the editing process and stuff before I moved.
Wow. So that was the first feature, although your friend directed it and you,
we co-directed and co-produced and she acted the lead part. So,
right. So you were behind the camera.
Yeah, I was behind the camera. Yeah. And she would be coming in for reviews and we did, you know, all the planning and prep and the on set, she would also direct some of the scenes and things like that she wasn't in. So yeah, it was a real collaboration from the ground up, that one.
Yeah, which are you happy with how that one turned out?
Yeah, I mean, it's not released right now, and I can't really go into too much of that, but it's still bubbling away.
It's interesting.
And I love the film, and we want to release it one day.
Yeah, it just fascinates me, because anecdotally, the people who can collaborate and co-direct, I feel like those turn out so well. I've noticed that a lot of the times when, you know, there's been quite a few features actually submitted to the festivals that have two directors who work well together. And, right. I think it actually gives them an unfair advantage over those, over those individuals who feel they just have to, you know,
do it all alone.
Do it all.
Yeah. I mean, there's no way. I mean, that film was a labor of love from every single person involved. We had such a skeleton crew and the cast all helped out. And it was grueling, but really one of the most rewarding things I've ever done in my life.
Right.
Because we left nothing on the field. Like, we came out of that shoot just absolutely wrung out, but really proud of the work we'd created.
Oh, fantastic. Well, so then you get to Seattle and do you decide shorts versus features or whatnot just based on ideas that come to you or the realities of life or?
Yeah, well, twofold. One, I was really keen to keep working in the film industry as an AD and learn from there's some fabulous female directors in Seattle and female filmmakers, producers and things like that. So I knew that coming here, I was really lucky because I felt like it was a really strong industry for women. And I started working on other people's sets, like Megan Griffiths's Lucky Them was the first feature that I PA'd on. And then the Bunyip film was still kind of going along in post at that time. So that was taking up a lot of my creative energy to keep that moving and keep myself invested in that from afar and make sure that my collaborator was feeling supported as well. So that meant that I was focusing on meeting everyone here and I started ADing on people's shorts and doing that sort of stuff as well. And that's actually where I met some of the actors that have been in my last two shorts. The other thing that Bunyip did teach me personally was that the aesthetic that I wanted to reach needed more budget. Like I could see, I have so much respect for people who can make micro budget features over and over again. But for me, I was like, okay, that was an experience. And I'm so glad I've done it. And I'm very proud of the film, but I feel like I wanted to take it to another level when I started doing my own work over here.
Right. Cause there's a vision in your head.
Right.
That, you know, is not completely compatible with the micro budget world.
Yeah. And that's become more and more clear as I've done work over here for myself. Like, and the stories that I write just aren't micro budget stories. Like no matter how much I try to write a feature that could be $250,000, it's just not what comes out. I write fantasy every time. Like even if it's like I've got a feature in development at the moment that has just a lot of the elements of the last short, Light Me Up. It's got an underwater sequence. It's got ghosts that come in and out. of reality and interact with some of the characters but are not seen by the others. So you've got to really play with that when you're shooting and planning how those interactions will work. And, you know, like, and it's a travel movie. It sort of features my love of the Pacific Northwest as well. It kind of shows us a little bit of everything. It's a bit of a bucket list film. And,
well, so, yeah, you know, and, it's just and not Lord knows doable. You love to shoot a forest. You love, you love nature. Your love of nature is so, it's one of the, nature is one of the characters in your films.
Yeah, definitely. It definitely is. Yeah. 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 I just feel like that was something my mum and my dad both sort of instilled in me. We had dogs and we did a lot of walking in nature with our dogs. Every day we would always go for a walk. And by the river or somewhere further afield from our house through the woods. And my, you know, I guess being an artist, I've always sort of struggled a little bit with depression or the cycles of energy that you go through when you're in creation versus it's starting to all crumble for a while and then you go back into creation mode. So Mum always taught me that the way to get through the harder times was to look out, like to go out and be in nature and have it, you know, pull you out and find solace and peace inside of the cycles of life that just keep turning. And so that's kind of why nature is so important to me. And I often juxtapose really big emotional events for my characters will be seen through like that location vista.
Yeah, your parents really did provide you with the perfect incubation for what you're doing. I mean, from the appreciation of nature and appreciation of the arts.
Yeah, they were pretty special.
Definitely. So how long were you in Seattle before The Hunter came about? Or was there a short before The Hunter?
No. The Hunter's the first one, and I did it hilariously. This is how this one came about. I have my first son, and, of course, that shifts everything. I wasn't kind of – I don't think parents know before it happens how much your life is going to change once you've got a kid. You know you want to be a parent and you want to have children, but – the reality of how much the world shifts, and especially for the mums, if they're the ones at home and they're feeding, the life is completely dependent on you. And it meant I kind of abruptly stopped working on as many other people's things. I have been working on features right through my sort of third trimester and other people's shorts and things, and then suddenly I wasn't anymore. And I was like, wow, for a while it was wonderful, and then there was an itch that just wouldn't go away. And we moved house to West Seattle at about 6 months. And I started going for walks in a little stretch of woods that is part of, I think it's the Pacific Northwest Trail or the one that goes all the way down the coast. And it's called Camp Long, and it's like this beautiful forest area. And it's, you know, surrounded by the city. But when you're in it, you just get transported to another place. And I was watching it go through fall, and I was like, I want to shoot a film here. And I feel like it's magical and there must be elves somewhere running through these woods. So I like kind of came up with the idea and called some friends and said, hey, Jonathan, Kylie, want to make a movie with me? And so like literally it was about a month later we shot the film.
Right, so the landscape really inspired the story.
It did. It did. And it was so accessible. It was both so magical and feels outside of time, but it was so accessible for us to walk the gear in, and there were trails, and yeah, it was just this wonderful mix of we can do this now on a weekend, and it could be really fun. And that was, you know, and then, but it also feels so outside of time, the little area.
Oh yeah. And it feels miles away.
I know.
From anything.
You should hear the raw soundtrack. It doesn't sound loud.
Really? Are there occasional cars and airplanes and things?
Eric gets the composer and sound designer of that, the poor guy. Like, oh my God. If I had known, I would have made it a non-dialogue film. but we did. He did a great job of cleaning that up for us.
Yeah, it doesn't show at all.
Yeah, there's actually trains and things like tooting through it and stuff like that.
Oh my God,
amazing.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Well, that's what every young filmmaker learns when they move to LA and they try to make something on the weekends with their friends. They realize, wow, there's never a moment there's not an airplane.
Yes.
There's two or three major airports in the area and they're always going over.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, and you know the other thing about the nature side of things? That was the one weekend that did an unseasonal, like, I don't know, something like 10 or 20 year unseasonal snowfall in November.
I remember
Seattle.
You saying that at the at the Q&A. You said, actually, because I remember asking, did you go around spraying leaves white? And like, you're like, no, it snowed for no reason at all.
Yeah. And literally we wake up on the morning we're going to shoot and I'm like, someone had warned me that in winter, sometimes the bridge to get to West Seattle can be really tricky to navigate. And I was like, I don't know if we're shooting a movie today. I don't know if people can get over that bridge if it's iced over, but luckily it was fine. So in came the crew and the champion actors who had to traipse through that wood in the snow.
Wow. But it's not like they were going through 6 inches of snow.
No, it was just a dusting, but it was cold. It was a cold day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, all the best performances are always done in an uncomfortable situation, right?
One way or another.
Yeah.
That's true. I think it also says something, the kinds of people who want to be actors, they have to have a certain amount of balls to the walls, courage. You know, they have to be willing to be in uncomfortable spaces, whether it's physically or emotionally.
Oh, I know. Yeah, it's funny. Every time I have a thing, I hate really cold water to bathe in, or, you know, pools and lakes. And every time I see it on camera, I'm like, oh, they must be so cold. Why are they not shaking? You know? I don't understand how actors can hold off the shakes.
I know.
And then you know the second they hear cut, their bodies are shaking like mad. It's unbelievable.
I know. I swear, like, The Hunter is one of the few films that doesn't have water in it, but like so many of my other films do. And there's a funny shot of me on the set of Bunyip where I'm in a wetsuit in this lagoon type area. And so the DP can kind of line up what we're going to do. And I'm freezing in a wetsuit. And then the idyllic scene that comes in the cut is this sort of sun-drenched, or the actors are in their togs swimming as if they've had a day hiking. I just feel like the cruelest monster when I have to put my actors into that cold environment.
But it's for the art.
They do it. Yeah. But they do it because they're amazing.
Definitely. Well, and you must not be a terrible person to work with, because as you said, you have these actors, you know, coming back to you.
Yeah, I'm lucky that way. I think for me, I've seen a lot of different kinds of directors and filmmakers. And for me, I think that the ones that I admire are the ones that build a family around them. Like the people that they want to work with, them back again and again.
Right.
And for me, those relationships are so important and they mean the world to me, that my friends are like, sure, let's do this. Like every time I pick up the phone, I'm like racked with nerves, but they're like, yeah, man, let's go again.
Right. And it feels like a big special ask to you, but to them, they're excited to work with you again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When I'm lucky, that's exactly how it feels. It's really cool.
So when you completed The Hunter and did a festival run.
Yes. And The Hunter was for me, I really wanted it to be a fun film and a bit of an ode to some of the filmmakers that I just really love. I find really fun in the fantasy world, like Joss Whedon and JJ and those sorts of people, because I just wanted a fun short, like, that could go and connect with the kinds of audiences that I am. And like when it got into LA, the film Invasion as its premiere, and then it went to Dragon Con. For me, I couldn't have thought of two better film festivals, because I was really excited to be able to show it in LA as a place that I knew I wanted to build connections with. And then Dragon Con for me was like this sort of epitome of that fan culture, and where people will travel from all over the world. I met a person from Melbourne and Sydney, some people that were over there for their cosplay, and in a bar. And like, it's just the most wonderful mixing pot. And so, yeah, the Hunter was, I just really wanted it to be the beginning of showing where I wanted to go in terms of fantasy being my bag.
Yeah, and I'm sure being where greatly, my heart is. I'm sure they really appreciated too how you presented the fantasy element. and you know,
three homes fun, but fun.
Yeah, but you know, it's you know, elves are so rarely portrayed that way. I mean,
right, with the twist.
Yeah, with the twist. Yeah. And honestly, it's funny. The last time I watched it, I thought, wow, maybe she will expand on this sometime. Because when your female elf tells the guy who thought he was a hunter that, you know, he'll be a pet, I'm like, geez, I wonder what she needs human pets for.
What does he become as he comes out of that chrysalis? I know. I do. I sometimes dream about where I would take that if we went into the elven world. I had this idea of how we might have another character, the sister, come in to try and save him. Because I really love kick-ass female heroines, and I'm really sick of seeing women portrayed in that we need a guy to save us kind of mentality. So I wanted to see the counterpart of that, the sort of sister coming in and having to go on like her own journey in order to rescue him.
And that right, would be really so it would be the human sister.
Yeah.
So it would actually be human female versus
kicking elven ass in female. An elven world. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And then you would find, I mean, I might even drop in like long forgotten lineage and magical powers opening up, or some kind of stuff that comes through when she discovers by being in the elven world.
Well, I love the idea. I love where you're going with this in general, because as someone raising a 10-year-old girl, it's wonderful, you know, how many things we watch together that just have a strong female hero. It's just great.
Yeah. It's really, I feel like we are going through a whole new phase now. And there's more, I mean, up until recently, there just haven't been that many fantasy directors that are female, like either. That's a voice that hasn't been there, but I think it's really needed. And so more of Patties. We need more Patties coming through.
So after Hunter, mm-hmm. you went back to an older script.
Yeah. So Light Me Up had been on the boil. In fact, it's been so many times I nearly shot it with a team. I had been working with a DP who, a friend of mine, and we were pretty close when my first son was born that we were going to shoot it. Then things came up and we couldn't do it. Then we did a little mood reel instead. And Jeremy actually ended up moving to Singapore. So and it's funny because every time a project goes through an evolution like that, you get like this huge new injection of fresh inspiration from the next collaborator as well. So the heart of what someone else invested in it still is there embedded in the work, but then you get something new. And I really got to experience the joy of that, because when I started working with Bliss, the DP on Light Me Up, there was something special there. And he had a real, just about to become a father when we first met. And he read the script, the original script that he read, in 2014, I think it was. You know, he connected with the material so strongly, moving into this new phase. And that I knew it was going to be really special to work with him, and his aesthetic is just, it's just so crazy. We are so aligned. Like, we would be on set and one of us would say something, the other would be like, yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. What, you know, when the push comes to shove and you're in the time crunch and you've got to solve problems really fast, like, we would just be able to take a beat and we would find our solution that still honored the story, honored the aesthetic we wanted to do, but maybe was a little simpler, or cut out all the stuff that we didn't need, you know, and just got right to the heart of the matter. So it was really wonderful working with him, and I hope to make many more films with Bliss and my producer, Vicky.
Yeah, well, both films I've seen, you definitely make so much of the environment and color.
Yes. Which, yeah, color is so important.
Yeah, I mean, you managed to make, you know, just a red light bulb feel like, you know, as visually interesting as a fancy special effect.
Mm. Yeah, that red light bulb was, really haunting. It was a really special symbol to me. My production designer, Erin O'Kay, she really got that. I mean, she, again, another person who my aesthetic just aligns with so beautifully. She worked on both The Hunter. She was the production designer with Carl on The Hunter, and then she went on and she was the production designer by herself on this one. And yeah, we just both, she also loves fantasy and loves bringing fantasy through practical elements in your production design. Like, she came up with that wonderful pathway that you walk along that becomes the entrance into the Portal Tree world.
I've got to ask, what do you have lined up? I think you were starting to mention things.
Yeah, there's a feature script that I've started, I'm working with the same producer, Vicky, and we're raising finance in the next few years and doing funding applications and things like that. And it's called The Living End. It's about a palliative care nurse who gets diagnosed with terminal cancer and suddenly realizes she's put her whole life on hold to be with her patients and hasn't really been living her own life. And so she sort of flips out, as you would, with that news, and drives like away from the hospital one day straight to the coast. And she meets this, while she's sort of processing that grief, she meets this driftwood artist who challenges her to sort of open up to life and get as much as she can in the last remaining like year that she has. And she ends up sort of trying to experience her bucket list all inside the Pacific Northwest. As she kind of embraces the life that she has. And it's a really beautiful, beautiful film. So I'm, I don't know how it's going to take shape yet, but.
I was going to say, and in this case, it sounds like not fantasy at all, very much based in the real world.
Well, except
or
that
there's elements
both
that you're
characters
leaving out.
Have these ghosts that are part of their life.
Oh, okay.
And it's the way they interact with the ghosts and what it says about their, it's what it says about what they're holding on to that's holding them back. Like, one is the sort of guardian grandmother who was the first person that Alice actually had to nurse through terminal illness. And so it was her own grandmother, and that caused her to change from being a painter doing a visual arts degree to going to nursing school. So her grandmother is kind of an Italian grandmother, she is like a guardian angel kind of figure. And then on the guy's side, because it's a romance, they do actually fall in love as a sort of byproduct of like reopening up to life and dealing with their past slash their future, depending on what was holding them back. And he has the spirit of his newlywed wife who died on their honeymoon, that's tying him to this beach, and she's like haunting him. And over time, these ghosts are interacting with both these characters and are a big part of the climax.
Well, if you're going to make something feature length that looks as good as Light Me Up, I'll do my thing where I light a little candle for film projects I hope get made. That'd be great to see.
Yeah.
I have so many amazing images. Like, there's this incredible scene where she's dancing on the beach in her wheelchair. They've just built this this walkway so that her wheelchair can come down to the hard sand, and she's dancing in the rain in her wheelchair. Someone's like pirouetting her around the sand. So, yeah, there's some beautiful images that are a part of that film for sure.
Fantastic. So you're going to continue raising two kids while you work towards getting this feature off the ground.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? That's what I was trying to say about parenthood. You embrace like a whole different phase of your life, but you can't stop being yourself as well. And I can't not write and I can't not direct. I don't know the way forward necessarily right now. I can't necessarily see it, but I just know that that's what I got to keep doing, because it makes me a better mom by, you know, expressing these stories.
That was so much fun. I want to thank Miri for taking the time to talk. We actually did do that by FaceTime because she lives up in Seattle, which I guess I got to remember. I have a friend who is in Seattle now. I guess part of the goal of being involved in a film festival is having friends who are filmmakers all around the country, so at some point I can go on a road trip and avoid hotels entirely. But enough pipe dreams. If you go to discoverfilm.net, you can see Miri's film, The Hunter. You can also use it to check out a lot of other great short films and links to some feature films. In fact, if you go to the website, discoverfilm.net, in the left column, right below the most recent posts, is a little section called Films. Just click on a title and you can watch it. As usual, I'll encourage you to check out Film Invasion LA, that's in June, and the Sherman Oaks Film Festival, which is in November. And thanks for listening. Yeah.